And today is found in the 21st and the 22nd chapter of the book of the Acts. In the 21st chapter, we have Paul going up to Jerusalem. He is traveling by ship, sometimes by foot, but this is his destination, Jerusalem. We find that he's on a ship, and this ship finally arrives at a port called Tyre. Tyre was a place that was very commodious. It was a city that was used by all shipping concerns in the world at that time. And we find that this ship, likewise, had much cargo on it that had to be unloaded at this present port, Tyre. So the boat put in at Tyre, and when they entered into this city, why, they found seven or certain disciples in this city, and there they abode 7 days. While they were with these people, we find that the Spirit of God spake through the mouth of these people unto Paul that he should not go up to Jerusalem. Paul could not be persuaded by these people not to go. He did not listen to the Spirit of God speaking through these people to him. And we find that these people, they went out with him when he was going to leave to the shore where the ship was lodged, and there they knelt down with him and prayed. They took with them their wives and their children, and they fell down on their knees and they prayed with Paul. A lovely thing to do, my hearers, especially when we don't know whether we're going to see each other anymore, when we're going away for a certain length of time. It's a blessing to get down on our knees together and pray to God that he might be with us, be with those that are going, be with those that are remaining. So it was here. They were very much attached to Paul in and through the gospel that he had brought to them, and in love to him, they went out of the city with him, knelt down with him, and prayed with him. And then Paul and his company got on board the ship, and these people, they left and returned back to their homes. From there, Paul sailed across the sea, and we find that they finally came to a city called Caesarea. In this city, we find Philip, one of the seven, dwelling in this city in Caesarea. He had four daughters. This man, Philip, we had two lessons on him, if you remember. The one was that he was sent to Samaria to preach the gospel. And while he was down in Samaria preaching the gospel, the Samaritans received the word with all joy. And it was so blessed to their souls, so many were given to believe, that they called for Peter and John to come down to Samaria likewise, who visited them and were rejoicing too, because so many were given to turn unto the Lord. Philip, from being in this place in Samaria, he was directed by the Spirit to go out into the desert. And there we know that he met this eunuch from Ethiopia, to whom likewise he preached the gospel. And from there we find that the Spirit carried him away to Caesarea. And Philip was found at Caesarea. Here in Caesarea, this man who was a deacon, chosen to be one, but is called in this chapter an evangelist, he dwelt there. He was married and he had four daughters. And these daughters were all virgins. They were all born again girls, and they were given the Spirit of God to prophesy. Oh, we have something here to be jealous of, congregation. If you have one or two children, and God comes into their hearts, what a mercy it is. And this man, he had four daughters, and they were virgins. They all had the Spirit of God. What a company of people were under the roof of this house when Paul came there with his company. All people that had the Spirit of God, they were united together in love and in affection. Philip received them, and surely it must have been good for them. And while they were there, we find that God sent a man down from Judea by the name of Agabus, a prophet. We read of this prophet in the 11th chapter of the book of Acts, how that he had come and prophesied that there would be a great famine over the whole world. And this famine took place under the rule and reign of Claudius. It was the year 44 after Christ had ascended to heaven. And many of the saints that were spread far and wide, they sent relief to the distressed saints in Jerusalem. And now this man, Agabus, he came down from Judea, he came to Caesarea, he entered into the house of Philip, and the moment he entered into this house, he took hold of Paul's girdle. And he took that girdle and he bound it around his hands and he bound it around his feet. And he says, so says the Spirit, the man that owns this girdle, so will he be bound when he goes up to Jerusalem. The Spirit again testifying by the mouth of this prophet, who likewise gave a visible sign unto him what would take place if he went up. One would think when you read this that he would have listened to the Spirit of God. But nobody could persuade Paul not to go up to Jerusalem. He was not to be persuaded. I can't find that God said to him that he should go. In the former chapter we read that he hasted to be at Jerusalem at the Feast of the Pentecost. He didn't want to stay at Ephesus. He sailed by it. But that God had commanded him that he should go up to Jerusalem, we cannot find. We find the Spirit testifying against him going up to Jerusalem. He should have listened to the Spirit, but no. He was of one mind and of one purpose, and therefore he would not go up, would not listen to these people who protested that he should not go. Now when this Agabus showed this in the house of Philip, we find that those that dwelt there, that means Philip and his wife and his daughters, and those that were with Paul, which was Luke and other companions that he had, they likewise pleaded with him, begged him, persuaded him, because the Spirit was testifying that he shouldn't go up to Jerusalem. But Paul, he felt in his innermost soul that he had to go. And when they begged him and pleaded with him like this, he spake unto them and said unto them, why weep ye? Because they were so attached to this man. You can understand that. He had been a brilliant gift of God to the church. He had established so many churches. And now to go up to Jerusalem and to be bound and probably to be killed. Oh, they didn't want him to do that. He could be more useful to the churches, even in that church in Caesarea. And if you will take notice, I think it's in the next two chapters, that it was the providence of God yet over this man Paul that he was in this city of Caesarea a prisoner. He was liberated, he was allowed to go in and out, but he was a prisoner for over 4 years in this city of Caesarea. How wonderful these people, they pleaded with him not to go up to Jerusalem, but he went anyway. But he was, by the providence of God and by the magistrates and the laws, compelled to stay in Caesarea. Now, these people that were pleading with him, their hearts were touched. They were affected by love towards Paul. And when they began to plead and to cry, he says unto them, why weep ye and break my heart? I am not only ready, he says, to be bound, but to die for the name and for the sake of Jesus Christ. Oh, my hearers, we can see in this what love and what zeal this Paul had for his Savior, for his Lord and Master. Oh, he was not only ready to be bound, but he was ready to die for the name of Jesus Christ. Oh, he looked forward to die for him. He truly did. This man, he puts many of us who likewise have made a profession of faith, puts us to shame. Oh, it is something to be jealous of, my hearers. How much have you and I over for Jesus Christ? Oh, I'm a Bible class teacher, but no one knows the troubles and the things that go on in your mind and in your heart to be a teacher, and how you would like that somebody else would take the position. You're ready to lay it down right away, to give up. Is this right? No, it's not. I wish I had that zeal. I wish I had that love that Paul had for his Jesus, for his Lord, for his Master. You would do something like this with pleasure. It would be your delight. He looked forward to do this kind of work. And when we are teachers, we're looking up against doing this work. We would like to run away from it. Shows how little faith, how little love we have for Jesus and for his cause. Another thing, if you do speak to people about Jesus, you warn people about their sins. It's for their own profit, for their own good. And you get a sour face off them. Huh, this already troubles you. You can't even stand a sour face off people for Jesus Christ. Shame on us if we are that way. I got to say shame on myself. Oh, that I could love him more. That I could be more like Paul was. That same Jesus, though, he's still in heaven. He can still give the same grace, the same love to some of his dear children here below. For he is a fullness of love and grace. And all he teaches us to call upon him and to seek him. And he will grant what we ask for. Of these people pleading with Paul not to go, they couldn't make him stop going to Jerusalem. Oh, this man, in this expression that he made, shows that he was prepared. He knew from the beginning, when he was sent, that Jesus said, I will show him how much he will have to suffer for my name's sake. And now he expected this. When I go up to Jerusalem, I expect trouble. I expect to be taken a prisoner. I expect these things. Don't break my heart. Don't weaken my constitution. Don't try to turn me away from this. This is what the Lord told me. What are you trying to do? Try to make me avoid my trials, my tribulations? They are in store for me. And oh, I have such confidence in God. I have such faith in him. And I believe that at the end, eternal life is awaiting me. So they couldn't persuade him. So they said to each other, well, let the will of the Lord be done. They knew what this man had went through. How many times hadn't he been taken prisoner? How many times hadn't he been stoned? How many times had he not suffered, that he was flogged, that he was beaten, that he was scourged? And every time God delivered him. And now when he's going up to Jerusalem and his spirit is witnessing what's going to take place, he was not deterred from going. He was going up to Jerusalem. So they said, let the will of the Lord be done. And now we find that this company of people, they remained in Caesarea a certain length of time. And then they took their carriages, it says, and they went up to Jerusalem. Some of the disciples of Caesarea, and one, a man, an old disciple, it says, by the name of Menasim, he went with them. It seems that he was a gentleman, he was a Jew, but he was a wealthy man, and he had a house in Jerusalem, and that was where they were going to lodge. At the time that they were coming to Jerusalem, it was the time of the Pentecost, and thousands of Jews came from all over the world to Jerusalem. And it was hard to find a lodging place. But this man, he had a home. He had a home prepared for Paul and his company. Even though the Spirit already testified that he was going to be in trouble and that he was going to be bound, he was going to be made a prisoner, and that if he, this man Menasim, gave him a lodging place, he likewise would probably be in trouble. It didn't deter him either. His house was open for him. Now this man, it says, Menasim, an old disciple. I was thinking about that. How long he was a disciple, I don't know. The Bible doesn't say either. Whether he was converted upon the day of Pentecost, whether he was converted when the gospel was brought to Cyprus, for that's where he came from, under the preaching probably of Paul, we don't know. The Bible doesn't give us any distinct views of this. But it says he was an old disciple. What a mercy, my hearers, if we have been a disciple of Jesus Christ for many a long year and have been kept at our work, kept at our duty, faithful to what he has called us to do, and that we likewise have been given many experiences in the work that he has set upon us, and that we have likewise been given to be prudent. And we likewise are a special gift if we are an old disciple of God. For it's good to gather with an old disciple. I like to meet old people that have experienced things in the ways of God. They can relate to you things that God has done to them that you haven't had. And when you hear them speak of these things, it makes you jealous. It's good to get in the company of old disciples. How many old disciples have I in my Bible class? Have I any? Has not God been faithful to you where you have been so unfaithful to him? Has he ever left you? Has he ever forsaken you? He never will, my hearers. Unto the hoary head, says in the Bible, he will be the same. We find one of the Psalms speaking unto God and says, forsake me not when I become old and when I become weak. What a mercy to be looking up to God for help and for strength. Oh, how many I have in my Bible class that are old and are not disciples. I thought of that too. Who are you a disciple of? Are you still on the broad road to destruction? Do you still serve the world, serve sin, serve the flesh? Oh, my hearers, if you continue in this state and you die in this state, then your end will be eternal death. For the wages of sin is eternal death. All you that are old, you that are gray-headed, you that are creeping with age, let me speak to you in love. I'm getting old too. Every one of us are. But all of you have never bent your knees, bend them yet. Those stiff knees of yours that are getting so that they can't even bend, ought to get down and seek this God in heaven above. Seek him yet. It's a time yet of salvation. It's yet a day of grace. It's not too late. Oh, that he would make you yet a disciple. Although you are old, you will be young in the spirit. You will be given such grace to be you that this God loves you and fears you, and he delights in your company. Oh, that this great God may become your companion, your refuge, your strength, and that you may find him to be with you even to the end of your life. Oh, you couldn't seek a better one, honestly. Oh, let me plead with you in your immortal souls before it will be forever too late. For your days are hastening towards the end. We know not the hour or the moment when we have to pass away, be we young or be we old. But when we are old, and God has spared us so many years, 80 years some, I believe, that are even amongst my Bible class hearers, they have been blessed by God according to his word. 70, 80 if we are strong, and some are above 80, and all still no disciples. Under the truth all your life, oh, may you be given the vow yet, and seek him while he is yet to be found. And now this old disciple, he went up with Paul unto Jerusalem. And when they came to Jerusalem, we find that the elders and James, the head of the church at that time, they received Paul very gladly. Oh, they loved to hear this man talk. For they had heard so much about Paul and what he had been out in the Gentile world and how God had blessed his ministry, how many Jews and Gentiles had been converted under him. And when he came to Jerusalem, oh, they were anxious to meet him, anxious to hear him tell what his experiences were when he was on these missionary journeys. And we find that the next day after he came to Jerusalem, he went in by the elders and by James, and there he began to rehearse unto them how God had been with him, how wonderfully God had blessed him and used him as a minister to the salvation of so many Gentiles. And now when these people heard this, oh, they likewise were deeply affected. Oh, that this God had been so good as to give salvation even unto the Gentiles. And they rejoiced with Paul. They were glad with him, and they glorified God with him. Oh, my hearers, it's good to get in a company of people that glorify God. We can't find too many companies like that today. We find plenty that glory in the flesh, they glory in man, but the glory in God, we can't meet people today. Nobody has any desire to get together practically to speak about God and about his ways. But they had many things to speak about, especially Paul. And now while he was there, we find that where he had been speaking of so many Gentiles being wrought upon, James, the elder of the church, he said, you see how many Jews even in Jerusalem have been given to believe in Jesus Christ. Oh, there were many that believed in Christ, but they still adhered to the teachings that they had from infancy. They adhered to the law of God. Paul, he had been preaching amongst the Gentiles and instructing them, and he had been telling them that there was no need for them to listen to Moses or to adhere to the customs of the Jewish people anymore. And there was no need for them to have their children circumcised. This was all done away with when Christ died and rose again. This was what Paul had been instructing throughout the Gentile world. And these people in Jerusalem who lived there and who had been born and brought up and had been instructed in the law of God and who now had likewise been given to believe in Jesus, they had not turned away from the law. They were very zealous for the law of God. And they heard that Paul had been speaking this way amongst the people. And they were prejudiced against Paul. They had been speaking probably to James and the elders and said, yeah, you call him a brother, but we can't call him that. He don't teach the truth. He don't teach the law of Moses. He tells them they don't have to listen to that. So these elders and James, they spake to Paul and said to him, you see so many Jews that are believers. Now do us a favor. We want you to prove to those people that are so prejudiced against you and have so much to say about you that what they say is not true. Now we have four men that have a vow. And we want you to go with them and you make a vow with them. And when you go into the temple with these four men, then you likewise will be at charges with them. They had to buy animals to sacrifice, and they had to give these things unto God at the end of their 7 days of a vow. And so Paul, he would have to likewise buy animals to sacrifice, and likewise help these men with this. He would be chargeable with them to what expense they had in this matter. And now, these people demanding this of Paul, it seems odd, very odd, because he had been teaching the opposite to the Gentiles. And now they wanted Paul, for the sake of so many Jews, to do something that these Jews did, to prove to them that he had no objection to the law, and that he likewise walked orderly and did what was right. Now, you know, I had a lesson not too long ago about Timothy. And you know, he took Timothy and he circumcised Timothy because there were so many Jews around that territory, and he knew Timothy was a child of God. And he knew Timothy, he would have a great influence on these Jews, but if he wasn't circumcised, they wouldn't have anything to do with him. So for the Jews' sake, for the truth's sake, he circumcised this man, Timothy, so that he would be a minister unto the Jews. So now here Paul, he wouldn't be persuaded not to go up to Jerusalem, even though the Spirit said he was going to have trouble, but now they persuaded him to go along with this, that he should go into the temple and that he should make a vow and that he should set a time with the priest when the end of this vow would be finished, and then they would sacrifice. And this way the people, when they seen him coming into the temple and doing as the other Jews did, they would be satisfied to know that he was not doing as they had heard so much about him. So he consented, Paul. It wasn't good that he consented. I believe later on that this James and the elders, they were sorry that they put this proposition to him. But he consented, he was persuaded, and he went into the temple, he took a vow, and he likewise came every day into the temple. And near the end of the 7 days, we find that there were Jews from Asia in the temple. As I said, when this feast was held, they came from all over the world. And now these Jews from Asia, they had so much against Paul. They were the ones that had followed him in certain cities even to persecute him. And now when they see him in the temple, these Jews from Asia, they likewise were filled with hatred towards him. And they thought, we have a good chance now to take this man prisoner. So they took hold of Paul. And they cried in the temple, men and brethren, help! This is the man that teaches everywhere against the church, against the law, and against this place in which we are in. He even has brought in Greeks in the church. Now, he had not done that. They had seen in the city him walking with one, Trophimus, an Ephesian, and they thought that he had brought this man in with him in the church. But he had not done that. He was not guilty of that. And they took hold of him, and they stirred up the people, all the Jews in the church. And when they made a mob of people round about this man Paul and took hold of him in the church, well, I guess those that ruled the church, they pushed him out of the doors. They didn't want any trouble like that in the church. They were so zealous for their church, and they thought that Paul had done something wrong by bringing a man that was a Greek into the church. But here, what were they doing in the church? They were profaning that holy place themselves. They were going about to kill a man, a good man, a man that would have been an ornament in that church, one that could have stood in the midst of them and expounded unto them the word of God in all its truth and all its simplicity. Oh, here they took hold of this good man, Paul. They made him a prisoner. And they went out the doors of the church, and the doors were shut. And they went about to kill him. They didn't bring him before the law. They didn't bring him to the priest. Oh, no. They were going to be the executioners of Paul. They took the law in their own hands. And they began to beat him and to hit him with their fists. They hit him all over his body and on his head. They went about to kill him. And when they were doing this, we find that word was sent to the captain of the Roman soldiers who were stationed in the city at this time. For the Romans, they had a garrison of soldiers in a castle right near the temple. And this garrison of soldiers was placed there because the Jews were never to be trusted. They always made riots and they always stirred up the people, and they were always having trouble with the Jews. So the garrison of these soldiers was stationed there for this purpose. And now when word came to the captain that whole Jerusalem was in an uproar, he immediately took his soldiers and he went down with centurions. And then when he came down to where they were trying to kill Paul, they left off. They stopped. And he rescued Paul. He delivered Paul out of the hands of the Jews. This was by the providence of God that this Roman commander had to be used to save Paul from his own people who were going about to kill him. And he took him and he led him to the castle. And as they were going to the castle, all the people followed. Oh, they all wanted to get their hands on Paul. They all wanted to beat him if they could. If they could, they would have torn him apart. But the captain, he took the soldiers and they lifted him up above all the people. That's the way they carried Paul. And as they carried him towards the castle, they went up the steps of the castle after him. And of course, this Roman commander, he didn't know what it was all about. He didn't know why they were trying to kill him. He hadn't heard anything about this man, Paul. He never even knew him, never heard his name. And he wanted to know what they had against this man. And one cried this and one cried that, so he didn't know what was happening to him. But when they carried him up the steps of the castle and they were going to bring him into the castle, why then Paul, he spoke unto this commander and said unto him that he would like to speak to the people. And he spake to him in Greek. And he looked at him. What? Aren't you that Egyptian, he says unto him. He says that some time ago let out 4,000 murderers into the wilderness. No, Paul says, I'm not that Egyptian. He says, I am a Jew, he says. I was born in Tarsus, he says, in no mean city of Cilicia, he says. And this here captain, he was surprised to hear him speak in the Greek language. He was a learned man, Paul. He was gifted likewise as the other apostles to speak many languages. And when he heard this, he couldn't understand why that these Jews had done this thing to him. So Paul, he wanted to speak to the people themselves, to the Jews who had taken him prisoner. And he pleaded with the captain and said to him, give me permission to speak to the people. So this captain, he allowed then Paul to stand up on the steps and to speak unto the people. And now Paul, he beckoned with his hand to the people. And when he beckoned with his hand to the people, there was a great silence. And when he started to speak, he started to speak in the Hebrew tongue. I guess this captain must have been surprised too when he heard him speak Hebrew. First Greek, then Hebrew. And when he began to speak in the Hebrew tongue, the people became more quiet. They listened. And he began to tell them his defense, what had happened to him, and what he had been before this. This man, Paul, he begins with his where he was born, and that he was a Jew, and that he had been brought up as a Pharisee, and that he likewise had been brought up at the feet of Gamaliel. When he mentioned Gamaliel, these Jews, they knew this Gamaliel very well. They knew that he was a wonderful man, a gifted man, and that anybody that had been instructed by him had been instructed very thoroughly in the Jewish religion. And now he begins to recite to them how that he likewise was filled with the same zeal as they had towards God. And that when he was under the teaching of Gamaliel, that he was like them, a hater of everyone that was a Christian. He begins to relate to them how he persecuted the Church of Christ, how that he had permission from the Senate and from the Sanhedrin to go from synagogue to synagogue and to take the people out and make them prisoners and bring them before them. And they were in prison. Oh, he had been so mean and so cruel. He was filled with a zeal for God, he thought, in doing this. He thought he was doing the right thing. He was taking these Christians and he was making scandals out of them, calling them all kinds of names and using them very terribly. And he had many of them put in jail. And he had been likewise when they had killed the martyr, Stephen. He had been there with them, and he had a delight in his death, he says. And then he says he went from Jerusalem with letters from the Sanhedrin to Damascus, and he was going to take the people that were in Damascus in the synagogues there back to Jerusalem prisoners. And on his way to Damascus, he begins to relate his wonderful conversion to them. Now that in the middle of the day, he seen a light above the sun, and him and his people that were with him, They were so frightened they all fell to the ground. They never had seen a light like that. And he heard a voice speaking to him from heaven, saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? All my hearers, Paul never forgot his conversion. Never. This wasn't the only time that he spake about his conversion. His conversion was a wonderful blessing, my hearers, not only for his own soul, but for the world in general. And even to this day, we have many of his epistles in this precious book that I have in my hands. Oh, what a blessing it was that God stopped this man on the way to Damascus. Has he stopped any of you, my hearers? On your way to hell, on your way in sin, on your way to go your own way, has he ever stopped you? Has he ever wounded your conscience? Has he ever spoken so sharp to you that you couldn't go on any longer? That you've seen death in the front of you, you've seen hell in the front of you, you were so frightened, you feared to go on any longer. Has this wonderful light shined down into your soul, my hearers, that you were given to see yourself as you never saw yourself before? Such a monster of sin, such a rebellious creature, one that stood up against the Almighty, one that was fighting against him. Oh, my hearers, when light comes, then we begin to see what God is and what we are. Paul was stopped on the way to Damascus. A wonderful light shined round about him, but he also heard the voice of Jesus. Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? Oh, when Jesus speaks, my hearers, he doesn't speak at a random. He doesn't speak in general, but he speaks personal. Has he ever spoken to you personally? Have you ever heard his voice? Oh, it brought Paul down on the ground. It brought him, what wilt thou have me to do? Has it brought you there, my hearers? He's relating this unto these people that are round about him while he's standing on the steps. He's telling them of what Jesus did, how that he appeared unto him, and how that he told him to go up to Damascus, and that it would there be given to know what he would have to do. And then he relates how Ananias came to him because he had been without sight for 3 days. And then Ananias came to him and spake unto him that he received his sight again. And then he relates that he went up to Jerusalem again. And when he was in the temple, he was in a trance. And when he was in this trance, he saw him. Who was that him? That was Jesus. That was that just one. He appeared unto him again in the temple. And he spake unto him and told him that he should leave Jerusalem and that he should go far away unto the Gentiles and that he would tell him what he would have to do. And they only heard him to this word when he got to that sentence that Jesus had sent him to the Gentiles. They didn't want any part of him anymore. Away with him, away with him, they said. It is not fit that such a fellow should live. After reciting such a wonderful experience, you would think where this audience had been so spellbound and had been listening so attentively, that when he got to this one sentence, that they lost everything what he had been speaking about. Their passions, their anger got the best of them, and they began to shout, away with him, away with him. Especially when he said that Jesus sent him to the Gentiles. Oh, they hated the Gentiles, most of the Jews. They didn't want anything to do with them. But God, in his infinite mercy, has gathered, I believe, more Gentiles than Jews into his church here below. Oh, we are Gentiles, my hearers. May he gather every one of you that are listening to me this afternoon. He is able. He is mighty. Oh, may he graciously pour out his Spirit upon us, that we may be gathered in, and that we likewise may become servants of Jesus Christ, and no more servants of sin. The Lord bless this feeble lesson to our hearts for his name's sake. That's all for today.